cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Frank Fahey as well. We had the stocks flip. We were down last night. We're up this morning. Moves up 475, Dow up 36, NASDAQ up 17 after Friday's sell-off. Friday could be, Frank, good morning. How are you?
Very good.
Maybe we should, I don't know, is Frank...
Recovering from going to the game Saturday night.
I hear you had a great time. That was rumor. Is that the right rumor?
What a horrible stadium. Hey, Tom, I got a call back. I can't hear you.
Okay. He went up to Ryan Field and he didn't have a very good time, shall we say, Manny.
Well, he said the stadium was horrible, which it is. But
then it started raining, and I guess they took him forever to get into the place, and then I don't know what else happened, and they weren't happy. So they left at halftime, I think. But anyway.
After spending $100 on the ticket?
Yeah, I think he did at least that. So we'll ask him when he comes back. What did you you didn't get a chance to watch Friday? And you know, I've been at this a long time, and the memory unfortunately blurs some of this crap. But Friday could have been the oddest day I've ever come across. They come out and they start talking about the flip in the middle of the night in the market was that somebody talked about a meeting with President Xi. And how somebody was working in the cabinet on this Canadian deal, and how there might be a deal like imminent. And somebody writes up on Bloomberg that they weren't sure that it was, and blah blah blah. So the president, they kept pushing about how there could possibly be a deal, and he's having dinner with Xi. So Larry Kudlow usually is the man that comes out and says the things the other way. Comes out and says there's been nothing substantive that's happened on this deal in like a long time. They have a bunch of things on the table they want the Chinese to agree to first, and they haven't done any one of them. So the chances of a deal like right now are pretty much zero. The market immediately goes flying down. And so then Trump heading off to one of his, whatever you want to call these things. Frank, how are you? I'm talking about the Friday's trade and how Larry Kudlow comes out and then starts talking about how we're asking the Chinese, you never hear anything straight from these guys. Not saying that Hillary would have been any better being straight, but the fact is you don't hear anything straight from these guys. And whether Hillary would have been or not, nobody knows, but anyway. Essentially want them to prove a negative. They want to prove they're going to stop taking intellectual property and a couple other things, which eventually means they have to admit that they did take all this intellectual property on like 50 different occasions, and here's how they're not going to do it again. Well, I can't imagine what that piece of paper actually would look like, would you, Frank Little? Even if they wanted to do it, I don't see how you do that. I mean,
probably much like the waiver that tells China they can continue to import Iranian oil.
Yeah, that's another one.
They're going to let China do whatever they want to because the guy's a Ken doll, no balls.
He's all mouth. I think you see is all mouth, but here's what these are. If you trade, and I think most of the people who listen to the show either do or want to or have a portfolio or whatever, and I hear somebody like me pretty much grumping all the time about lack of information, okay, and how people seem to have it and you don't have it. Now, anybody who's listened, and Maddie, you know ad nauseum that when the Iranian situation came up about with the deadline and all that stuff with the oil. Oil was about $75, right, Frank?
Right, 72 to 75, and we were talking that might be a good bullish trade.
Yeah, and everybody was, a lot of people were talking 80, 85, certainly in the Brent, 90 in the Brent. All of a sudden, this thing starts going down. This is before the guy gets wiped out over in the Turkish embassy. So, okay, look, do you see the part about the family wants the body now or the body parts?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Anyway, so So you're sitting there thinking, how could that possibly, how could oil be going down? And how many days did I mention that, man? This is the most counterintuitive trade I've ever seen. Now it pops up, there's what, 8 or 10 countries, big countries like China, India, that are on the, oh, by the way, they can import oil, not oil.
South Korea, yeah. Japan.
Yeah.
Jeez.
They could continue to import oil from Iraq. And of course, the footnote is not as much as they did before or some. Now, I want to know who the hell knew that? How many people? This is not, it was not, not that I cannot accuse myself, of checking every single piece of information on oil every day. I'm not that good. And I don't have that many hours in the day. But I did you even hear a hint to that, Frank, before?
No, I didn't. If you look at the list of the top oil importers from Iran, the top 9, 8 of them are on this list, which hasn't been released. One of them, the United Arab Emirates. Now, why are they importing oil? They're reselling it.
So are they
still letting the United Arab Emirates, you know, clean up a fungible product?
Evidently.
Through a middleman?
It appears to be. I mean, you can write fiction like this. Now, how many of the Trump supporters of the world have any idea this kind of stuff is going on in the background? All they know is their man is beaten up in Iran. You know, it is such falsehood. It's unbelievable. So guess what? Yesterday morning, the worst thing that could possibly happened to me. In terms of, Kevin giving me grief about
you paid $3 a gallon for gas.
No. I got up, of course, the crack of dawn that I always do anyway. Now the crack of dawn is an hour earlier, right? So I'm all the way back from, I'm already back from the Myers at, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. And I turn on, this thing, and here's about a 5 hour thing about, in-depth thing about Hitler. So of course I get buried into the thing. I was stunned at some of the stuff. You know, in the last 2 years, Frank, the dude was taking 62 or 72 different pills a day. And guess what
he was a man ahead of his time.
Yeah, and guess what the last drug they just developed and they popped on him. I had no idea that this drug went back that far.
No idea.
What's methamphetamine? Because evidently the other stuff was putting him to sleep. And he's getting shots and he's getting pills like every morning from like all these doctors. I wonder the guy was even nuttier at the end. But how do you do that to somebody? So they got the shots. Maddie, I don't know, you're obviously not old enough, but when I was a kid and you went and got a shot, I mean, now it's like no big deal. I mean, it's the needles are, I mean, anybody who's afraid of needles, well, I guess you can still be afraid of needles, but I mean, it's not, they used to actually reuse them, and every doctor had a machine where you would essentially sterilize them, right, Frank? And you'd
it was like your own Sterisign, that place out in Woodridge, but it was in your doctor's office.
Yeah, and the thing would, but they used steam. They didn't use ethylene glycol or whatever the hell they used. But I mean, the needles were so much bigger. I mean, those shots hurt. I mean, so they're showing him getting these injections, and the needles look like they're about a quarter inch wide. I'm going, God, no wonder the guy was in a bad mood all the time. But they were all as crazy as the Germans are about being bureaucratic, how's that for politically incorrect, and everything been written down in triplicate, there is not one scrap of evidence anywhere connecting Hitler himself to the Holocaust. I never knew that.
What radio station did you listen to this on?
No, I mean, this was on like not that he wasn't involved. I mean, nobody ever said
no,
that.
No, I understand.
Yeah, that one, it was always he'd have a private meeting with his guys, and the next week the thing would like, you know, up. But not one record of any of those meetings, not anything written down, not one scrap.
I would guess that there's a number of cases where there's no written scrap of what he ordered.
I would think
beyond the Holocaust.
Well, the military stuff, he was right in the bunker, you know, so he was actually issuing those orders like an idiot. But you know, it was just, I mean, it was unbelievable. And he was absolutely, talk about a guy who was just so full of hate. Just scary, scary stuff. But awful, but, you know, I'm as everybody can probably figure out, I'm fascinated by when you look through history, some of the most tormented people also had the most talent in other ways. You know, which is really something you wouldn't expect. You think if somebody was a nut job, they wouldn't be good at very many things, but that's not really the truth. I mean, and you wonder why. Why, what is the same parts of somebody that could be such a, you know, basically the biggest criminal, basically in, well, place history. I don't know, Paul Pot and probably a few others were right up there, but, well, Stalin killed more people too, right, didn't he? I mean, when you're up at that level, I guess it doesn't matter if there's a few other guys with you. But they all seem to have an amazing amount of talent in other areas. I mean, Stalin never had the ability this guy did to have people like him. Everybody loved this guy.
Well, it was coming out of the Depression, so people loved Roosevelt.
Well,
but people love Trump. Well, you know, he's getting credit for, you know, right now, the recovery. You know, it's never been better. Largest GDP growth, greatest growth in employment, you know, ad nauseum, all of which turned out to be lies.
Well, without
every claim he made last Friday.
Okay, well, without digging into the individual and the people who are, you know, around him or whatever you want to call him, when we tap on our young man, Mr. Matt Weber, who's all over the world these days, why is that? Why is it that people can get away with doing that? Some people can, some people can't. He's not the first. He won't be the last. And the fact is that he can get away with it. It doesn't surprise me. He uses it as a weapon. I think a lot of people would if they could tell you that it was nighttime out when it was daytime and you believed them. They probably would say it, but they sit there and go, why would anybody believe me? I don't believe myself. I mean, that'd be a problem with me. I couldn't keep a straight face. But why is it that the man, everybody you talk to, I mean, I was talking to a Democrat the other night. He says, well, what are you talking about? The guy's it's been fantastic for the economy. Why do you say that? He says, well, because look at the jobs. And there's never been jobs like that. I said, you know, the first 20 months or 21 months of his presidency, there's actually slightly less jobs than the last 20 months of Obama's presidency. No, that can't be right. Yeah, it is. No, that can't be right. I mean, why, how can anybody say what he's saying? I mean,
job growth is slowing.
Well, but this month the numbers were good, Friday. There's no doubt. We'll have Carol Denninger later to talk to him, talk to us about those numbers. But the fact is, they're not. I mean, they're not quite accurate. We've had a 3.7% unemployment before. We've never had this deal where people exited the workforce. So the unemployment number, which has always been a crummy number, now is even crummier, if that's possible. But I mean, how is it that some people can continue to lie in front of people, and everybody believes them, and other people don't seem to be able to? I mean, it's a phenomenon that I wish I could. Here, talking about right here, Trump also touts that his record creating millions of new jobs. Since he took office in January 2017, U.S. economy has added an estimated 4.1 million jobs in the first 22 months of his presidency. And he said that's certainly a lot of jobs, but in the last 22 months of Obama's presidency, the economy added 4.8 million. By that math, job creation has actually slowed slightly under the Trump administration. The job gains under this is the under various presidents all the way back to Reagan. Who's the biggest job creator in terms of percentage gains in his first 25 months of his presidency? By far. Matt Weber. Give me an answer.
What's your question? Who was the biggest first 25 months of their presidency?
23 months of their presidency. Actually, 22 months now. 22 months of their presidency, the biggest percentage job gains in percentage terms.
In percentage terms?
Yeah.
I would guess Obama. Coming off of 07, 08. But I don't know.
I would say Reagan coming off of the late 70s recession.
You know, sometimes you can tell the quality of the chief by the quality of his braves. Let's see, Obama would be last. and Reagan would be second to the last. This is the first 22 months. Obama and Reagan both were down 2%.
It took longer than 2 years for them to turn it around.
Right. Well, okay. but Obama came in with such a bleep storm.
Oh, yeah. No,
I'm not.
People are going to look back in history at that turnaround and be amazed by it.
Well, what I'm saying is that's what happens with statistics, okay? I'm not saying that the first 22 months means anything, right? Obama and Reagan came in with lousy situations, so after 2 years, they were doing lousy, and then they turned it around both from there. Okay, so I'm not... What I'm saying, that the statistic what's being jammed down our throat right now is by the president and everybody else around him, is that nobody's ever done this good in the first 22 months of the presidency. The fact is, he is, let's see, where is he? He is fourth. First is Jimmy Carter, which is over like 9% since he came in. Because after Nixon, wow, things were horrendous. So it was the first. Then it was Clinton, Kennedy. Johnson would have been probably second if he didn't leave after 4 years. He left. Why Johnson only was up there to 13 months in his grab, I'm not sure. It goes Carter, Clinton, Kennedy, Trump, Bush, Nixon, Ford. Ford actually had the highest at the end of. Here's what happened to poor Ford. When he came in, he went down to minus 2%. And in the next year, he made it to the plus column. So Ford probably had the biggest turnaround in his first 22 months.
I'll also say, to be fair to Frank and I, Chief, when asking the question, said going back to Reagan. And then your answer was before Reagan.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Well, I screwed
up. If you had asked the question
we might have
guessed differently.
All right, who's the oldest guy here?
You're going way back before Reagan.
I'm going to Ford. Nixon. So there's like six guys right here, eight guys.
Well, we heard Johnson, too. How come he only has 13 months?
That's why I didn't pick his name up, because he's only halfway through the graph.
It's like Bai Yung Cho took over your body.
Yeah.
But never mind.
What I'm saying is, these statistics are just that. What does it even mean after 22 months? It has to do with the situation that you came in with, right? And what you did from there. Obviously, Carter's went the other way the next 22 months, so it's not like it's an outstanding job or anything like that. And here's another one on the gross domestic product. First 22 months of their in terms of growth. I'll ask you, who was last and where is Trump? Who's first, last, and Trump?
I would put Clinton first.
At least you're closer on this one. You're not last.
Well, my gross domestic product grew the most under Clinton.
Okay. Well, by far last is Reagan. He's negative 2% after 22
months. Whoa.
Yeah. Everybody forgets, if Reagan was not elected the second time, the statistics, I'm not saying it was his fault, the statistics in his first term were abysmal. He would have been considered statistically the worst president ever in history. Well, I don't know, there might have been a couple guys back in the 1900s, but he was awful. It wasn't until well into the second term that all of a sudden, Carter, Kennedy, both are up. Carter's up 10%, 11% in the first 22 months, his gross domestic product. Kennedy's right behind him at 10. Clinton's about 7. Then Ford, then Trump, then Obama, then Bush 2, Bush 1, Eisenhower, Nixon, and Reagan. This one goes all the way back to Eisenhower. So, I mean, like I said, again, you gotta ask yourself, what does 22 months mean? And the answer is nothing. Now, wages, on the other hand, again, Kennedy, Nixon actually, is the highest on wages, 8%. Because he was in the midst of the inflation era, right? So in the inflation era, he had, at least the inflation era started under him, so wages started going up. So Nixon, Carter, Trump again, he's right in the middle of the pack everywhere. But here's one near and dear to your heart. Stock prices, after 22 months, who had the best stock prices and the worst? God, some of these guys are pretty bad.
Worst is probably Nixon, right?
Second to the last, Bush 2.
Okay.
Bush 2, market is down 32% in its first 22 months. How bad is that? Nixon second, Kennedy actually is negative, Carter negative, Reagan negative, Bush 1, Obama by far 45%. Then Ford second, Trump's third. But how many people opining today will look at these four graphs? And again, I'm saying the four graphs don't mean squat, because who says 22 months is a month you want to look at anyway, right? of the fact that the only reason why anybody looks at these things is because somebody telling you how good he's been doing. And if you actually look at it, they're just okay.
Well, here's what's going on, I think, on the opining. Is the opining we hear is on the radio. And selection bias is going to make that conservative if they're opining on the economy. While selection bias in the mass media, as we're told, will opine with a left-leaning bias. And so much of what we hear is, when it's not lies, goes through that filter where the selection bias and which media do we gravitate towards.
Well, right. And, you can do what you want with statistics, but I have an interesting question as we go into this election today, and this is where I'll pick on Matty Weber's brain a little bit here. The reason why I ask, all right, is now we're talking about these NBC News poll, and this thing is, it's fairly detailed. 7-point advantage. Democrats hold 7-point advantage ahead of the midterms as Trump's base comes back home, whatever the hell that means. Evidently, a lot of Trump's base was not going to vote early on, and now evidently they are. How's this for your base? I can't. I don't know how these guys define this stuff. This must be somewhat of a liberal thing. How would you describe Trump's base, Manny?
How would I describe him?
Yeah,
I'm not going to say.
Okay, well, I think you could have read. You could have written this thing.
He might want to get another job someday.
You could have written this thing. The slightly narrowing reflects rising interest in the election from the foundation of Trump support. White men, especially older, less educated, less affluent, in small towns and rural areas, most most noteworthy for a midterm election. The 2018 campaign has seized the attention of voters at camp. And my question is, this thing allegedly takes a telephone poll of 1,000 voters conducted November 1st to 3rd, carries a margin of error of 3.1 percentage points. I don't usually do this on the air, but I'm going to say bull bleep. How does you're talking about Mr. Luddite, as I've kind of gone back to my flip phone. How the hell, I don't know, Matty, how many statistics course you've taken. Frank, I assume you took some at Notre Dame when you were there.
A boatload.
Now, to do a random survey, okay, and random surveys are really spectacular when you think about it, the math, but they're also very key in a few things. If you got 100,000 people, I'm going to bet you could take a random survey of 25 to 50 people, and it would be very accurate. Am I right, Frank? Now, what's key about that, though? You need a random, and not just you picking numbers. You need a random number table. You need something that's generated actually randomly. You must get those 25 to 50 people. You can't get the guy across the street if they're not home. You can't get the guy's wife. You can't get the wife's husband. You must get those people. If you miss on three or four of them, you might as well throw the whole thing out. Am I correct, Frank?
Pretty close. It will change the accuracy of the questionnaire or the sample.
You need to find
sample size and quality is everything.
If you walk into the place and you say, "I need to talk to Matt Weber," and Thomas is sitting there, you got to follow Matt Weber in the can. You can't talk to Thomas. That's exactly. I mean, I can't mathematically, listeners. On this one, trust me. Now, tell me this, Manny. A telephone poll of 1,000 voters. First of all, now if you're looking.
That's going to include zero people 35 and under.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because no one has a telephone.
Well, I guess you could.
I have a landline. I get calls all the time.
Yeah,
you would. From real companies doing this stuff.
I mean,
I'll ask who it is. And it's like, holy cow, you're talking to me? So then I tell them, yeah, I'm voting for Roskam. So.
God. So you mess with them. Okay, but.
Why not?
Well, I'm not saying.
You know, Rasmussen, I lie to every time. I've had 3 calls from him in a month.
All right, then this paragraph, I'm saying, whatever these guys say, much as I'm sure they work their fannies off, I'm going to say is BS. A telephone poll of 1,000 voters conducted November 1st to 3rd. Carries a margin for error of 3.1 percentage points. Among the 774 voters deemed most likely to cast ballots, Isn't that where Britain screwed up? The people who were not likely actually went. The error margin is 3.5. I'm going to say on a poll of 1,000 voters, this percentage, this margin for error has got to be 15. I'll bet, how many names do you think they started out with, both of you guys, before they finally talked to 1,000 people? If the number's 2,000, this whole thing, you might as well throw it out. I'm just saying. You guys are, I mean,
I don't disagree. I have no idea right now. I'm sort of out of that, but yeah. What are the samples?
Yeah.
I mean, they already showed us in the 2016 election that these aren't working.
SP futures up 4, Dow futures up 28, NASDAQ futures up 11. I regret to say that China's Xi didn't buy his futures through PTI. Again, talks up commitment to free trade. That's what the rally is all about. You must have bought them through Schwab. What do you think? We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stacks & Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Frank Fay, Mr. Matt Weber on the board, and Mr. Carl Denninger in a few minutes. S&P futures now only up 1.25, Dow down 3, Nasdaq down 1, as President Z is talking as well. So we see we've got Trump. Everything's going fine. We're going to have a deal. They're going to knuckle under. Larry Kudlow, nothing at all is happening. And Z saying that, what does he say, we're raising... shouldn't always whitewash themselves and blame others or act like a flashlight that only shows the light on what somebody else is doing and not yourself. Calls Trump law of the jungle and beggar thy neighbor policy. So obviously it doesn't sound like he's capitulating anytime soon. Unbelievable. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 33.3%, FTSE up 36.5%, CAC around up 13.3%. So, man, do I sound pissed off that I didn't have the news on this Iranian stuff so I could have bought more puts in my XLE? If I sounded, it's only because I am.
Yeah.
You know. Nikkei down 344. Now, these guys are up a boatload on Friday, so they're giving back about half it. Nikkei up down 344. That's 1.6%. Shanghai down 11.4. Hang Seng down 551. But they were up 1,000, so they're giving back half it. Must be interesting trading over there, Frank. Wow. We've got oil down 20 cents, 62.94. Another memo we didn't get. Brent down 4 cents, 72.79. Natural gas. Now, here is the number. This is unreal. 3.48. It's up 20 cents. I don't think I've ever seen that before. In fact, I know I haven't. Our Bob, down a penny. So whatever you pick up at the gas station, you're going to lose at the furnace this week. Gold up 29 cents. Silver unchanged. So not much going on there. Maddie, we got Forest Traffic Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of issues already this morning, Chief. Lakeshore Drive, we have a crash southbound, blocking the two left lanes. Looks like it's just before Oak Street curve there, heading toward downtown. So that has Lakeshore Drive backed up. Hollywood to Monroe, 20 minutes. Expect delays this morning as they work to get that clear, but that's blocking the two left lanes on the north side, heading inbound on Lakeshore Drive, southbound there. On the south side, Dan Ryan looks okay, but we already have a crash on I-57 just before the Cal Seg Channel, northbound I-57. That's blocking the right lane on 57. Bishop Ford looks okay. No issues on the Stevenson. Traffic building on the Eisenhower. Kennedy and Eden's look normal at this hour, so that's good news. Off the expressways, we have a crash at Western Avenue and 53rd Street on the south side. And then one other issue in the area, in the northern burbs, Town Line Road, which is Route 60 at Route 45, there is an accident causing delays. Weather today, lots of clouds today. Could have a couple of isolated showers as well, but nothing like yesterday, so we will dry out a little bit. But cloudy and cool, a high of 51. Right now it's overcast and 45 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 82 today. Right now it's clear and 58. In sports, we're halfway through the season, Chief, and the Bears are in first place, 5-3 overall, winning their second straight game, this time in Buffalo. 41-9 was the final. A couple of defensive touchdowns, a pick six by Leonard Floyd, a fumble recovery return for a touchdown by Eddie Jackson. Jordan Howard had a couple of touchdowns. Mitch Trubisky threw for a touchdown and an interception, but the offense was kind of not needed. The defense was so good and dominant, and the Bears take care of business in Buffalo, 41-9 the final there. Cardinals were off yesterday. Sunday Night Football, it was the Patriots helping out the Bears. They took care of the Packers 31-17. So the Bears are percentage points ahead of Minnesota. And then Green Bay and Detroit both lost yesterday. So next 3 weeks, the Bears play interdivision opponents. So they'll really have to try to separate themselves here over the next 3 weeks. NBA, Bulls were off. Suns beat the Grizzlies 102-100. And college football, I want to hear Frank's recap of the Notre Dame game. But
you can only get the first half.
The Irish are number 3 in the playoff rankings. Bama number 1, Clemson 2. And then Michigan sneaks into the top 4 at number 4. Chief.
Two questions. What in God's name has happened to Ohio State? They almost lost to Nebraska. Must be one of the worst teams in football. What is their deal? What has happened to Ohio State, the much vaunted Buckeyes?
I think Urban may be one of those coaches that teams tire of after a certain period.
Well, Manny,
it happened to him at Florida.
Manny, why don't you dig up the standings?
I think you might be right there. I could definitely see that. Dig up what standings?
Big Ten. If Ohio State beats Michigan, they still have a chance, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they only have one loss, and that's to Purdue. Michigan is undefeated in the conference, and so if Ohio State was to beat Michigan and win the rest of their games, then they would own the tiebreaker and they would go.
So Ohio State's got MSU away and Michigan at home, right? Left? Is that what I'm thinking?
Let me pull up their schedule here.
So Northwestern.
I think you're right.
Ohio State is at Michigan State, at Maryland, and then Michigan at home.
All right. So then you've got, if Northwestern beats two of the three crummy teams in the conference, they're in the playoff on the west side, correct?
Yeah, they're a one-loss conference team right now, even though I think they have four or five losses overall. Yeah, they own the tiebreaker over Wisconsin. They haven't played Iowa yet, but Iowa has three losses now, so they're pretty much out of it unless you know Northwestern has an unexpected loss.
Well, Northwestern's got to play Illinois, which ought to be a winner, and Minnesota's even worse than Illinois, right?
That's what it looked like Saturday. Illinois took it to Minnesota, which was kind of a surprise. Yeah, Northwestern is at Iowa, which that's a 50-50 game. At Minnesota, which they should win, but Minnesota's decent at home. And then Illinois at home, which they should definitely win. So, but I think even if Northwestern goes 2-1, I still think they're in. They have to go 1-2.
So Alabama still has to play Auburn, right? And they didn't have to play Georgia this year, correct?
Correct, yeah.
I have no idea what's going on out west.
No one's good out west.
So Southern Cal's useless.
Yes.
Washington State?
Yeah, Washington State's okay, but, you know, I don't...
That's a function of having a good coach.
Yeah, they run the spread offense with Mike Leach, and he's just consistently scored a ton of points, and every couple of years he has a really good team.
I'm gonna make a useless prediction here, Frank. I'm going to say that after my one-game survey, you know the Rams have been beating everybody upside the head all year. My one-game
survey. They got beat upside the head themselves yesterday.
Yeah, well, I think their quarterback in a big-time play of the NFC Championship or the Super Bowl will prove wanting because he sure didn't look like Drew Brees yesterday. Last couple of minutes, he had a chance to win the game, and he didn't do anything.
I think you're right. I will say that for him, he needs to get home field advantage. If he can get home field, then I think that can equalize it. Going to New Orleans is a really tough place to play, and they kind of fell apart in the second half there. After they stormed back to tie it, and then the fourth quarter, they just couldn't do anything.
So you are disagreeing with Hall of Fame coach, millionaire video guy, and longtime announcer on TV.
That there's no such thing as a home field advantage?
A venue never won a football game.
That's just blatantly wrong. In Vegas, it's worth 3 points. It has a huge factor.
Okay. I didn't say
what's it going to be next week for Notre Dame, Florida State? It's supposed to be below freezing, winds of 30 to 40 miles an hour. I'm dead serious. They're talking 22 degrees game time with snow showers. How do you think Florida State's going to do?
I think they might not show.
Well, Florida State is horrible. Horrible.
I'm not showing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Notre Dame has Florida State, which you definitely win that game at home, I think. Syracuse is going to be an interesting game. Yeah. Syracuse is pretty good. And then at USC, which is always a game.
Yep. And USC obviously has a lot of people out of the serious talent pool, so you can never just walk by them.
But they winning that game against Northwestern on the road in relatively not great weather. That was a really good win, and covering the spread too. Not that I noticed.
Yeah, not that you noticed. What in Alabama the biggest spread ever. Of course, if you shut the other guys out, you usually do cover.
Well, yeah, LSU had no chance against Alabama watching that game. I mean, they looked like a pro team versus a college team.
Yeah,
LSU couldn't get a first down.
Yeah, it's pretty
and
bad.
And LSU's really talented. They couldn't get a first down.
All right, Frank, if you have the mix, the brew of how we got 2 minutes. How do you want to trade this week? What are you thinking here? Right now, the chalk has the Democrats with about a 4 or 5 house advantage in the House and actually like losing a spot in the Senate. A lot of it.
Yeah, 538 has it 6 out of 7 that the Dems get a majority in the House. So we're going to get to see the income tax returns. That's something to look forward to. Right now, I think I just watch. Are we going to go up or down? If the Dems win, is the market going to go down? You know, ostensibly that's what I think, but there's some, Trump can, is a wild card. So I'd probably sell wings. That's just me, with vertical. So think iron condors. I'd want to sell volatility and assume that we're going to stay in a range, but
I think we're
every time I say that, I'm sort of wrong.
Well, I'm just, when you look at what's different, I mean, that's when people listen to guys who've been in the business a long time, Frank, I think they want to learn, A, what the history was about, and also what's different. I've seen many a time that you came out with a crummy jobs report, a good jobs report, say a crummy jobs report and the market's down or whatever bad economic number, in all administrations. I mean, it wasn't like this guy's the first. Obama would throw somebody out there and say, oh, no, these numbers are really pretty good or blah, 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 blah. I've never once seen two members of an administration come out with totally different stories on the same day. I mean, this adds another new wrinkle to what was already a pretty tough problem. And I've never seen stuff like this Iranian oil thing, where you and I think, well, this oil is at least steady here. Why shouldn't it go up with the Saudi Arabian issue and Venezuela's not getting any better? And all of a sudden, we got one guy trumpeting like a bazoo that this Iran's not gonna have a drop oil out there. And sure enough, every one of their big customers has a got out of jail free card. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, I'm sure there has been.
And it goes down almost 20%.
Yeah.
And you and I were mildly bullish. We're going, well, this scenario says, based on past experience, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah. And, I mean, I know the thing's down, what, $9. And our XLE is down like $9. And I'm going to say we made $5.56 of that back with puts. But it's still not $9. I mean, so I'm not happy about it. I'm pissed. Anyway, Frank, take care of yourself, buddy. Talk to you later in the week. We'll maybe talk after the election. SP Futures up 2. Dow Futures up 11. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Out. Matt Weber on the board. I have Mr. Carl Denninger with us. S&P futures now up 1. The Dow is unchanged and the NASDAQ is down 4. So not much going on. We were down a little last night. We're up when we came in and now we're pretty much flat. Carl, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, except you got to pick what we got to talk about. If we got, do you think there's enough subjects on the page here? Have we ever had so much stuff to talk about? We seem like we solve these problems 1 week and the next week they pop up again like whack-a-mole. Whack, whack.
Well, yeah, it seems that they just don't go away, doesn't it? It's amazing how both the political and economic landscape keeps coming back in your face.
There's a word
for that, by the way.
Yeah,
it's called revolution.
Yes, there might be a cure for it, but we're supposedly set up that our revolution could be at the ballot box. I could go for one of those. A third party where you actually had some people in there that had some common sense and that lied to you all day long. I could do that. I don't want anybody to.
Yeah, I think that would be nice, but I think it might be a little, shall we say, optimistic.
Well, I'd still rather hope for that than people shooting.
Well, so would I.
Yeah.
But, the wish in one hand and hope in the other and... You know what the other one is, and see what fills up first.
Let me ask you two questions because you are somewhat of a history maven like myself. I mentioned earlier. I got stuck watching about a 4-hour documentary on Adolf Hitler yesterday morning. It was absolutely special. I didn't know the guy was on 62 different drugs every day, and then they finally put him on methamphetamine as like the 64th. Good Lord, how can anybody still be alive with all that stuff?
He's not for a while.
For a while. Two questions. One is, you watch these unemployment numbers more than anybody, at least I think you have. Have you ever seen a day like Friday, even though they weren't commenting on that specific number, where the administration had two totally different stories on something like the China deal with Kudlow and Trump diametrically opposed to what was happening? But how the hell do you trade that? And then here, I'm genuinely pissed off, Carl. I have a huge position in the XLE. And I've managed it pretty well. We had puts all the way down, and, we didn't get clobbered too much, and we made most of the money on the way up. So it's not, it's okay. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that 8 to 10 countries had a get-out-of-jail card on this Iranian. I knew something was afoot while oil was going down, not up. So I smelled a rat, but I never would have predicted even this administration would have 8 countries that are the biggest buyers from Iran saying in the midst of all this BS that you get out of the White House that they could continue to import oil from Iran. I never dreamed that was out there. How could I have? Or am I dumber than I think?
Well, I think there's two things going on here. Let's deal with the unemployment thing first. So the trend that I identified a number of years ago continues unabated, which is that the majority of this job growth is happening in the unskilled labor market. Of course, that's the low-wage part of the labor market, too. So while the headline number is good, and while more people going back to work are good, and by the way, most of the gains this last month came from people re-entering the workforce, which is rather interesting. In fact, that was better than two-thirds of the number. And that's, I mean, you know, no matter how you look at it, people getting off the couch is not a bad thing, okay?
Can I stop you there for a second? Can I stop you there for a second? A guy who sounds and looks just like you, I'm going to say 3 months ago, said all these people left the workforce, and now they came out of it. I'm looking at July, August, when 700,000 people went out of the workforce, and now those people essentially... I guess I'm asking you, is this... Those numbers seem awful big to me to be happening. That was my first question to you going to be. Is the volatility in that number, can it really be that big?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It absolutely is. And that's one of the paradoxes of trying to look at these numbers in a month-by-month basis and say, you know, oh, they're, you know, this is a wonderful jobs report because, you know, we had 230, you know, 250, whatever, you know, whatever the number is in a given month. It's the reason that when I do these reports, I look at them a little bit differently and I use the year over year number to try to get to, you know, where are we from a standpoint of compared against the labor force, which goes up by about 150,000 a month. Okay, so you have to have, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.6 to 2 million jobs created a year in order to keep up with that. And that's just the raw numbers. I mean, it's the data. It is what it is. You know, whether you like it or not. But the thing is that when I look at where we are now over the last, over the last 12 months, it's positive. So I mean, you know, it is what it is.
Well, I mean, it depends, and this is not to be argumentative because I don't want to be. I'm trying to understand. If you look at the end of 2017, and you're right. I'm looking at your page, by the way. You're the one who gave me. I have this Carl's page on my thing, which has everybody in the workforce, who's in the workforce, that's unemployed, employed, and available for work. Okay, not in jail or whatever. The troubling one for me here, and either talk me out of it or tell me I'm right, is that if you look at the end of 2017, the amount of people that entered allegedly the workforce, 160,320,000, now we're 162,637, so we're up 2.3 million people. Now, but if you look at the people out of the workforce, went from 94,75 to 95, so let's say that's a million, whatever. So essentially, over half the people that have entered the workforce are in the unable to, now they're not the same people. There's obviously retirements over. That number being half the people, to me, Carl, has been the problem. If you look at the decades from like 72 to 82, 82, 92, something like 80 or 90% of the people that entered the workforce got a job. And then somewhere along the line in the mid 2000s to today, half the people in our workforce go right into this other category. And it seems like we're maintaining that, not at a month-to-month basis like you're talking about, but over a yearly basis, we're still saying that half the people who enter this, quote, workforce go right to this not-in-the-workforce column, which is just too high, even now, with the...
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, looking at the unadjusted numbers from October of last year, it was 95,301 for not-in-labor force. Okay, and this last month, it was reported at 95,732. Well, that's half a million people.
Right, so, where are you getting those numbers? Because I'm looking at the A1. I must be looking at the adjusted because I got 95,395.
Right, you are. What you want to do is go down the report, past the there's two data tables, and then there's a block of text, and then right underneath there is the household survey with both adjusted and unadjusted numbers. And I use the unadjusted numbers because it takes all the game playing, all that seasonal nonsense out. And if you're going year over year, last time I checked, every Christmas falls on December 25th. So, you don't need the adjustments, and all they do is add game playing if you're going on an annual basis.
All right, I'm looking at household data store. I'm going to have to get the other one from you because the bottom of my page is the bottom of my page. So I'll get that from you later, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah. So what do you make of the numbers? Were strong, but if you average this month and last month, they're right about where they're at, 175, 180, 190, like they're every month.
Right. That's the thing, is that when you look at, you know, when you look at last month, you know, as I pointed out, last month, from a historical basis, you know, predicated from last year, was missing about 300,000 on the unadjusted number. So, you know, it's 300K light, and, you know, and this month is, you know, several hundred K heavy. So, am I surprised by any of this? No, not really. The thing is when I look at the 12-month run rate of the population growth, the delta between population growth and jobs on a 12-month run rate basis, this last month was plus 537, and that's in, you know, on a 12-month basis, rolling basis. And that's not a bad number. That means you are dragging people out of the not in labor force number, which incidentally is almost exactly what we have between those two things. So if you look at the not in labor force number, it went down by 431 last month, and on a 12-month rolling basis, we added 537,000 jobs more than we had people go into the workforce.
Kyle, where in your stuff, because you obviously have numbers here that are better than mine, the trick bag that I is when the economy is getting better. Like I actually do think right now we're kind of percolating along here, and the people who say you and I are sitting on the sofa, but we know how to paint a house. I'll tell you what, if we have any energy whatsoever, we can find somebody's house to paint right now. Or we can find, if we know anything about carpentry, I guarantee you there's a porch to fix in my neighborhood. Or, I mean, there's all kinds of them. So one of the things the economy has trouble picking up is when people go and do that kind of work, and I'm not going to say get paid cash, I'm going to say get paid by check, and it gets reported at the end of the year. So it always has struck me that when the economy's getting better, it's actually getting better faster than you think it's getting better. And when it's getting lousier than you think it's being lousy. And, do your numbers sort of pick, the household survey should pick that up, because it should say that Matty Weber's off his can on the sofa somewhere working, right? Even if he's painting a house and that's not really his, he used to be a welder or something. So the household data should pick that up, shouldn't it? Or at least try to?
Yeah, and it does for the most part. It's one of the reasons I use it, and I use the unadjusted numbers, but you have to be very careful trying to do that on a monthly basis because it's so noisy. So it's you have to look at the 12-month rolling number, and that's, but you also have to expect that when you use the unadjusted figures and use the household data, that there's going to be a lot of noise, and so a single month does not tell you a lot. What I flagged a couple of months ago was that the usual end of summer firing was unusually large. And that was a potential flag. But now we've had two good months, and so, all right, that looks like that was just noise. You know, it was a potential that it was the leading edge of a downturn. But, you know, 2 months later, nope, that doesn't look like it is.
What do you make of I've heard two or three different, stories on tariffs in the last week from just my, small sample talking to people story. One is on some of the price increases. I've mentioned this three times now. I know a guy. We got a guy that does auto glass, and his family's been three generations. All of a sudden, 10% wholesale tax or price increase to him across the board because some of the stuff comes from China. Not all, but everybody's used it as a gleefully. What's raised is 10%. But then I've heard that some of the small metal stamping facilities are very busy, and you know, I'm not saying they're raising the prices. I didn't ask that question, but. Because a lot of the stuff now, it's a little easier to do that stuff here than to ship stuff to China and ship it back with the, you know, ship the raw materials there, ship the finished parts back, that your people are at least afraid. That's probably a several month turnaround, right, Kyle? So people, I think, are afraid of what might happen to the tariffs in the meantime. I don't know if it's permanent. But now those guys are seem to be doing somewhat better. And if you are a machine operator and you can't get a job now, that means you can't put your shoes on right, I think. I'm sensing a very uneven type of thing, but everybody says the prices are going up no matter where they're at. And people are taking advantage of, look at General Motors report, for God's sake. $605 more on a pickup truck they make compared to last year. That's a real number.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that any excuse, any political excuse to raise prices into what you believe is a strong economy. Remember, you can't raise prices if nobody has any money to pay with, right? So, or can't get any credit to pay with. So there's always a desire by producers to raise prices because, you know, what is a profit, right? But
right.
Price minus cost. So that's always there. It's tampered by both the economic conditions and also by competition. But when you have something like this tariff thing that's going on, it's a convenient excuse. Now, when you look at the trade balance data, though, that's come out over the last few months, the idea that this is actually showing up in terms of inhibiting imports and inhibiting trade is just nonsense. The data says it's not happening. So, you know, there's a lot of game playing going on. But then again, price increases are what typically happens when you have a government that turns around and throws 6% of the economy into the economy in the form of printed money.
Right.
And that's what they've done over the last 12 months. So anybody that thinks that we shouldn't be seeing roughly 6% price increases across the board in the things that you actually buy and use is on drugs. That's what you should be seeing. And the idea that we have a 10-year treasury rate trading 3.214 right now as of Friday's close is even more crazy, because that means that if you're buying 10-year treasuries, you're taking a 3% annualized loss.
Well, you are and you aren't. You are if you're even make it worse, Carl. Let's talk about Europe. If you to buy a bond, there's two reasons. One is a guy like me gets the account of Carl Sr. and he pays me whatever. Say I was in the we do mostly commissions, but if we did the fee, I can only imagine how pissed off you'd be if your own man gave me $10 million and I'm paying and I'm charging him 1% a year and I dump it into a negative interest bond.
Yeah.
it's the world's stupidest trade, right? As an investment, but if you know Mario Draghi is going to call up the bank at where I just bought it and pay more for it like a moron, I make your dad, you know, 5 basis points in 5 hours, you're going to say good job, even though the original purchase was insane, right? Which is really
right.
It has nothing to do. I mean, do you think anybody in Europe that buys a negative interest bond actually thinks they're going to hold it for 10 years? But if they are, boy, I want to play poker with those guys. I mean, good Lord.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's...
This is the problem you have with the environment that we have today, is that there's the distortions that have been put into the marketplace are so crazy that things that you would think of as utterly insane all of a sudden look palatable.
What do you... Just in terms of psychology, because I'm not going to ask you your age or anything, I mean, Manny's getting old, though. I mean, I knew him when he was really young. But how much difference when my grandfather bought his first Model A, he didn't buy a Model T. He saved up dough. He had never driven before. He went to the dealership, paid the guy cash, and drove it home without even a driver's lesson. That's one thing. If he got there and the thing was $100 more than he brought, he turned around and walked home, I would guess. But if right now, last year, Manny and I did a whole segment on the average car price was what, Manny? $31,000, and the average, I could be off by these numbers, the average loan was like $29,800. It didn't even...
Yeah.
Now, in people's psychology, does it really matter whether it's 32 and 30 or 31 and 29? I mean, if it's just another $5 a month or $10? I mean, I hope we never get there, but I think we are, Carl, in some ways. I mean, I've noticed.
Although I think we absolutely are there. I mean, you know, you look at what's been going on in that area, and it's just ridiculous. But this is what is now driving so-called American business. Okay, you look at GM and Ford sales. What do they sell? They, for the most part, they are companies that sell pickup trucks.
Well,
right? That's where the money's made. Okay, do they sell sedans? Yeah, a few, but they don't make any money on the sedans. They make a lot of money, however, on pickup trucks and SUVs. And so, but why do they make a lot of money on pickup trucks and SUVs? For people that buy pickup trucks and never put a single sheet of plywood in the back the entire time they own it. And the answer is that they can get you in the F&I office, and you know, there's that $480 a month payment, and you know, it's $10 more than it would have been if they didn't make an extra $3,000 on the truck, and so you drive off with it, and that's the kind of insanity that's going on. How do you sell somebody a $1,000 cell phone that has an average service life of 2 years? Think about that.
Yeah, it's, well, because they do it by month.
But think about the craziness of you know, you 24 months, so you call it 20, because you know, some of them you drop it and you break the screen, right?
Right.
So you're talking about $50 a month before you paid for any service, just for the physical slab that goes in your pocket. That's crazy. And yet they sell all the time. They have no problem. You know, there's no problem doing this. And a couple of years ago, phones in that same caliber were $500. Now they're $1,000.
Well, and if you look at, depends. I'm going to say, I don't know, Matty, kick me from the other room. The people who spend 15 hours a day on the damn thing, $2 a day is cheap, Carl. What else can they do for 15 hours for $2?
Well, but see, you know, guess what? How did we get to the place where coffee is $6?
Well, that's bizarre. Yeah, I mean, I get that. I mean, I took the significant other out to dinner and one of her friends on Saturday night, and went to a nicer place than usual. And I noticed that I go to the Restaurant Depot a lot and buy stuff for the office, and just because I like going in there. It's amazing to me how most of the stuff on the menu is 25, you know, upper 20s for dinner. And the lamb dinners are $28. The beef dinners are more, obviously. But the pork dinners are all $28. And I happen to know that you can buy pork anywhere you want for under $2 a pound. And I'm thinking that that roast pork dinner, as good as it was with all the stuff, it's really down home, great cooking. A German, I mean, so, you know, it's German place, so it's Wiener, really good stuff. I'm saying that the thing on the plate costs $4, tops, maybe $3, and it's going for $25, $26. Now, fish, different. If you get a thing of salmon, you're paying more for that. But the whole, you know, there's a mentality here. I mean, Carl, you've been on the show a long time. Remember girl Maddie? Used to do she went to Loyola.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't not her, but some of her friends who I never met, so I can't give the names out. They were deuce and a half, deuce and a quarter in the hole at going to school at Loyola. By the time they graduated, and one of them, this is so funny, says to me, "Well, my girlfriend had the birds and the bees talk with her dad," and I'm thinking, God, she should have figured that out before she was a senior. but I didn't say that. Had to do with her money. And she was an English major, and she was going to be a teacher. And he figured that she was going to be 43 and a half before she paid off her student loan debt. And she was and she was going somewhere for spring break. I said, well, I mean, but I didn't even have to ask Maddie, because she's a great kid. And I go, Carl, in our day, if we owed somebody $300, and we had a chance to work that week and pay somebody off and have a few bucks left for beer, we went back to school, the chances of going on spring break vis-a-vis having that job were about 1 in 50. I don't know a soul who would have said, I'm not paying you, I'm going on spring break. You know, I mean, type of thing. But now, if it's the difference between 42 years and 6 months and 42 years and 7 months, and I really want to go on spring break, what the hell's the difference, Carl? I mean, the mentality is totally different. I mean, if you're borrowing,
well, but look at what's happened there. When I went to school, and probably when you went to school, because I suspect we're somewhat close in the same, you know, the same age bracket, you could literally spin pizzas and pay the tuition.
Yeah,
try doing that now.
No, you can't. But I mean, it's always surprising that why does the population, you have a cocktail with somebody, and they go, why doesn't the government, you know, pay down their bills, do this and the other thing. Why don't people? The government's acting the same as people do. Don't worry, next year will be better. We'll pay it off next year. Okay. I mean, it's not like...
But they never do.
But they never... Well, neither do people. I mean, it might do a little better.
Well, I know, but you know what drives... You know what drives the cost of college? Is people doing that.
Right.
Your kid goes to college, you fill out the FAFSA. What are you out of your mind? Yeah. Well, if I don't do that, then I won't get any discounts, I won't get any scholarships. Okay, and you know what? If nobody that was matriculating that year did it, you'd have an empty college. and the price would collapse.
Oh, sure. And it should. Yeah, it's a big, it's a huge, but the thing that they have going for them in the colleges, and this is a little, I think that, I don't know how we deal with this, Carl, is if you and I'm going to say that I could probably scrounge around the Chicago area. God knows there's enough Chicago public school buildings that are damn near abandoned. But you know what? For most of the stuff I took in college, economics and, you know, a lot of the business, all you needed was a blackboard. And obviously you'd have to have something other than a blackboard now, but the fact is that's all you did need. We could put together 15, 20 serious business and maybe a couple economics guys to teach a four-year program or certainly a two-year program. And I'm going to say that education could be just as good, you know, the football games and all the other stuff, is virtually any place. I don't think we get accredited. I don't think anybody hires anybody from there. I mean, you talk to Lou, he says, if you're gonna try and price somebody out at your law firm at $500 an hour his first year or $400, you can't take a guy from John Marshall and get away with that, even though the kid might be smarter than the guy who's coming from Harvard. There's this whole ramp up game here that's part of the accreditation, it's part of the game why these guys are that really is flawed, I think, Carl. I mean, I honestly do. But I don't know how you and I, even if we wanted to, if we were the Secretary of Transportation, Education tomorrow, I don't know how you put that truck back on the dock. I mean, I honestly don't.
Well, I do. Well, I do. The same way you put the medical truck back in the dock. You take the government teat and you turn it off and then take a big laser and cauterize it so it can't be reopened. And the market will take care of the problem within an hour.
I would agree with that, except what ends up happening is the infrastructure tends to follow the money. Now, if you walked into the dining hall like you did in 1973 and you saw your basic chicken and the mystery meat like we got every night in a small little salad, people would be, I mean, there was some, let's see, on Monday night, the kind of the chopped meat and gravy was Salisbury steak. On Tuesday, there are like four names for the same dinner. But now, you go in there, I'm going to say, the Notre Dame cafeteria is a five-star restaurant. There's the salad bar that's better than any you've ever seen. There's the Hispanic, the taco bar. There's something else. There's the fish place. You walk in there, you go, this is spectacular. It's like going to one of those parties where they have four different, there's the Mexican part of the place. There's the Oriental part of the place. I mean, they have that every single night. I mean, that's what people have gotten used to. I mean, the idea of walking down the hall to take a pee, that's not happening anymore, Carl. I mean, in any normal place. You don't build a dorm where somebody's paying $15,000 a year for their room and board and have to walk down the hall to go to the bathroom. I mean, you're getting a hotel room, for God's sake, now. I mean,
you're getting a luxury. You're getting the Fairmont.
Right.
not just a hotel.
Yeah.
All right. But, yeah, I mean, it's, I know. And I don't know how you put that genie back in the bottle. You've got the kids that come out of Lake Forest, and they're like, "Well, I'm not going to put up with less than sushi every night."
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, you wonder why it costs $45,000 a year to go there, too, huh?
You should have seen my buddies that they were Evans Scholars. I'm sure you know what that is, but you're not from the Midwest, so Evans Scholars, the Caddy Scholarship. The Western Open, that's what that was for, was for the fun Caddy scholarships. Anyway, so everybody had a dorm, but the dorm didn't, or a frat house, essentially, but the house didn't provide any food. These guys in Milwaukee, Carl, you'd have loved it. They knew every 2-for-1 this, 59-cent burger after midnight joint. The food was abominable that everybody ate. They came down to Notre Dame, one guy goes, "You guys eat like this all the time? This is unbelievable." I mean, I walk across the quad, I actually get dinner. Everybody else complaining the food's lousy. He goes, "You guys have no idea. I'm eating the 59-cent hamburgers every night. This stuff's great. I actually get a dessert. I get a salad. This is unbelievable." So it really is a question of point of view, isn't it? I mean, of what you come from. All right, what's at stake, really, in the election? I mean, does it really matter? I mean, the House hasn't really, Congress hasn't done anything for the guy, plus or minus. Well, I guess they did the tax thing, but
not really. No, they really haven't. I mean, the big things that need to be addressed, the headliner is the healthcare situation and the monopolists, and it's the only way you're ever going to get the federal deficit down somewhere close to zero or actually at zero. If you took 80% out of Medicare and Medicaid, which you could do if you broke the monopolies, you would do that almost immediately. You'd be within $100 billion of a balanced budget now, right now, today. All right. Now that's not on a cash basis. On a cash basis, you'd be showing about a $400 billion surplus, but on a full on and off budget basis, you'd be within $100 billion a year of balance. So that's the only way you're going to get there. You could zero defense and you'd only get halfway there. I mean, you know, that's the kind of insanity when you look at these numbers. There's been no movement there and there isn't going to be. What you will see is no further, if the House flips Democrat, and I put it 50-50 for tomorrow. If the House flips Democrat, you're going to see absolutely no movement on any legislative agenda or any legislative activity for the next 2 years. There'll be endless impeachment discussions and investigations and blah, 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 which won't go anywhere either because you can't impeach without a conviction in the Senate, which you'll never get. But what you will do is basically have everything grind to a halt. The question is, historically, that's good for markets. Okay, split government historically has always been good for markets. Whether it is this time, I think, is an open question, because I think even with the declines we've seen in the high flyers over the last couple of weeks, my guess is there's still an awful lot of what you could call a Trump put that's in the market prices today. So if you see a complete stonewalling, which is what you would get from a split government, my guess is that's seen as bad news. And that's the odds-on favorite, but not by a lot. If you asked me this 2 months ago, I would have said that just historical trends, the Democrats will take the House, no question. The math does not favor them getting the Senate, so I never would have believed that in the first place. I think actually one of the more interesting things is real close to you guys, which is it appears that Michigan is going to legalize recreational marijuana in 2 days. And if you read the actual legislation, not just the ballot proposal, but the legislation, they're going to lock out all of the multinational and public companies because of the way their licensing works, and they're going to protect small business and micro businesses. And that is just, it's a different model than any of the other states because of the way the legislation's written. And I think you could actually see several thousand small little pot shops that don't distribute, can't distribute, but the big guys can't come in and step on them. But this might actually be a good thing for the state, which has been essentially moribund and has crazy high taxes and costs everywhere. You might actually break the model a little bit.
I'm going to shed my accusative liberal thing. And, Carl, I don't like anything like that. That is just another tax. I think the lottery is an abomination because the people who they suck on totally don't know the odds.
And I
get that from where I used to live. There was a coffee shop downstairs or a convenience store. Every Saturday, like the good son, I take my mom to breakfast. I get my coffee same time. You can imagine me same time every Saturday. And if there's this black dude in there, $20 from work in the street, shall we say. Big thing, a quart of Coke, two things of Doritos, and 17 lottery tickets. And you know what?
Yeah.
The tax on, I see so many people in the suburbs now, waitress will work 8 hours, make $100, she drops 40 on the video poker before she walks out of the restaurant. You know what, Carl? It's just another tax. It goes down a lower common denominator. And these idiots that say in Chicago, oh, don't worry, all the cash will come from the tourists. That is somewhere between out and out BS and an out and out lie. That absolutely does not happen anywhere. The only place that could pull it off was Las Vegas when they had 300,000 people there where you had a ticket out of town. You flew in, you flew out. But nobody else could pull that off. It's just another tax. And now
the only place I see it is different is, and this is kind of the thing, is that the tax rate that they've got on this within the legislation is approximately the same place that you have an excise tax on booze.
Yeah.
So is it really any different than beer? No.
No.
And so I, that, you know, I'm no more worked up about it than I am on beer.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't have a problem with the legalization. I love the fact that it's going to be small places if it actually is like that. It should be done for that reason. We should just legalize it. We should just have it out there like any other product. I get that. And if we can pull some people off the heroin thing, that's spectacular. But let's not say we're doing it because now we don't have to keep our budgetary house in order. It's just another $50 we get on everybody every week. That's not the right reason, is all I'm saying, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, you're right about that. Compared to the other states that where the market has essentially become, you know, huge. And, well, just look at the public, you know, the public companies that are out there that are in this space now, all right? I mean, look at the valuations that they have. They're insane. And yeah. And that Michigan's actually crafted things to prevent that from happening, I read the legislation. I was very skeptical. I read it, and I said, oh, gee, there's actually some stuff in here that I could support.
Carl, we've had a great discussion, and I love you, and I don't want to pee on your shoes, buddy, but I'm gonna have to because I'm such a curmudgeon. As I walked out on the trading floor in 1981, I said, this is unbelievable. All these people, some win, some lose, they're all competing. This is the hotbed of capitalism. How could this ever change? The people on the investment side, the people doing the trade, actually have people fighting for that trade. This is competition. It can't get any better than this. And here we are, 35 years later, there's three market makers. There's none of those people left. To think, as smart as Manny you are, I'll guarantee you that in Michigan, there's already people rounding up the lawyers, if that legislation passed, to start working on it. And in 15 years, if you and I are still here arguing on the show, I'll guarantee you that it won't be that way. As much as I love it, and as much as I would love, because you're talking about the trading floor in the 80s, go look at it now, buddy. I thought there would never be a way that the big guys could take this control, and they did.
Oh, yeah, I won't be surprised at all if 10 or 15 years from now, Tilray supplies 90% of the weed.
Yeah. And, I'm working with some people who are actively buying up places. I mean, I'm not their agent or anything, but I know who they are, and that's what they're doing countrywide. And I don't know if there's any economies of scale. I would love what you're saying, but now I'm with you though on the part. This is we need, in order to break this bedrock of what's happening with the non-competition anywhere. I mean, you and I are absolutely on the same page with. How does government have to act? I mean, they almost have to. I think. They don't have to. In our industry, I think you have to maintain ease of entry. If you don't,
right.
I mean, there's no way that somebody could start like we did in 91 with five guys off the trading floor and just start a brokerage firm. I mean, you could never do that. You could never file the application. You could never do any of those things, Carl. I mean, that right now it's almost at a point where government has to actively make sure at every airport that there's always 20 landing slots available for the new guy, should some new guy pop up. That there's always, you know, two or three gates that anybody can use. They're not going to do that. I mean, in other words, they need to be active. That if you and I want to put up a cheaper extended care facility or immediate care facility, they almost got to be a loaner of last resort for us, because we're not going to go up against these guys and start one of these things. We'll never get the property. We'll never get the permit. They have to actively make it easy for us.
I think you're right about that, but in addition, you also have to be extraordinary. You have to actually look at the text of the Sherman, Clayton, Robinson, Patman Acts, not this nonsense about how if you can't show price injury, then it doesn't count, because that's not in the law, okay? And actually say, okay, by the way, you pull this, you're going to get indicted. We're not going to fine you. We're going to indict you.
There's one other guy in the world right now, Carol, that has read those things and cares about them and thinks they should be right as the day they were printed, and you're talking to them.
So, but I don't see that coming anytime soon, so don't get me wrong.
No, I'm not saying right now there needs to be an active, how do we stop the Carl Chief, Matty Weber biotech firm that has two or three hot new drugs we can't get them anywhere unless Merck buys us. We have to actively address that and say we've got to make it so these guys can do it on their own. Whether we'll lend them the right. money or we'll do something, I don't see anything like that. I mean, we're going to end up selling out to get the thing through, or they're going to claim it's their patent, they're going to claim something. We've got no chance. We got to find a way to give us a fighting chance. And I don't see that happening at all, do you?
No, not in the the current model, and unfortunately it needs to, but I don't see the movement in that direction at all.
Did I ruin your day, bud? I hope not.
No, it's nothing that I haven't seen before. But that's the whole problem, is that you've got you just look at at what's going on. Look, Amazon's saying supposedly Northern VA is the preferred place for HQ2, right?
Yeah.
Like, the last thing Washington D.C. needs, the general D.C. metro area, is more concentration of wealth and more concentration of executives. The very last thing that area needs.
Two years ago, when this thing first started, Carl, and you and I think we might have talked about it, because so much of what they do now is influenced by Washington and their growth and everything. It has to be nearer where that stuff's happening so they can take care of people, dinners and everything. You and I talked about that 2 years ago.
The bribes must flow.
That's right. Hey, buddy, it was terrific as usual. Have you back soon, maybe right after the election, or maybe even later in the week or next week, because this will be fun. You have a good one. S&P futures down 250, Dow futures down 28, NASDAQ futures 19. Come back, Mr. David Adelman. Oil up 9 cents.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. David Animal, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures now down 250. We're slow this morning. We were down last night, then we were up when we came in, and now all of a sudden we're kind of the other way. Dow down 35, NASDAQ down, I think, 9. Oil is up 9 cents. We have one big mover here today that we'll get to it. We have David explain it to us. DAX up 17.1%, FTSE up 28.4, CAC around up 11.2, so just a slight move to the upside there. Asia the other way, however. Giving back, I'm going to say roughly half of what they made on Friday with that huge move. Nikkei down 344, 1.5%, back under 22,000. Shanghai down 11, that's 0.4%. Hang Seng down 551. These guys are up 1,000, so they've given back about half. Oil, it's up 9 cents. West Texas, Brent up 34. That spread is down $9.90. This is one I have no idea. Did another Farmer's Almanac or something come out, Matty? Natural gas now up 27 cents, 3.56. That's 80 cents higher than it was a few months ago. That's a move I have not seen. I'm sure David will have a year where a move like that, but every day, Matty, was it? Natural gas 272, 271, 273. All of a sudden.
Not lately.
No, not lately. And we've got gold is, now down $3. It was up $1 when we came in, so it's doing nothing. Silver down 9 cents. Matty, what do you got for us, Trevor Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We've had some crashes earlier this morning affecting Lakeshore Drive, also affecting I-57. Those are apparently all clear now, so that's good news. We're looking good on the Dan Ryan. I-57, a little bit more traffic volume than normal because of that earlier crash. Bishop Ford looks okay. No accidents or issues on the Stevenson or Eisenhower, but heavy traffic volumes. Same with the Kennedy and Edens. We're approaching an hour from O'Hare into downtown on I-90. Only accidents in the area. Out in the western burbs, near Naperville, Ogden Avenue at Finley Road, there is a crash causing delays. Northern suburbs, Townline Road, which is Route 60, out Route 45, there is a crash. And then just east of there, Route 137 westbound at Green Bay Road, up in the northern burbs, there's an accident as well. Only other area of concern, South Loop, Michigan Avenue at 18th Street, there's a reported power outage in the area, and that has traffic lights dark there, specifically at Michigan and 18th, so keep that in mind if you're navigating throughout the South Loop. Could run into a little bit more congestion than normal. Weather today, lots of clouds, more rain in the forecast, not like yesterday, but some drizzle and showers could pop up. It will be cold and windy, a high of 51, but with wind chills, it'll feel like it's in the 30s all day. Right now, it's overcast and 46 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 82. Right now, it's clear and 59. In sports, halfway through the season, and the Bears are in first place. Haven't said that in a while. They're 5-3 now after a 41-9 rout of the Bills in Denver, or in Buffalo, not in Denver. Bears remain percentage points above Minnesota. Green Bay lost last night in Sunday Night Football to the Patriots, 31-17, so they're behind. And the Lions lost as well, and they're in last place. So Bears now have three straight weeks of divisional opponents as they look to try to hang on to first place in the NFC North. NBA basketball, Bulls were off. Suns beat the Grizzlies 102-100. And as we touched on a bit earlier, college football rankings came out. It's Bama and Clemson 1 and 2, but the Irish are in there at number 3, and Michigan of the Big Ten sneaks in at number 4. Chief.
I think Michigan's going to stay in there. I mean, if they don't lose Ohio State, I think they're pretty darn strong.
Well, their defense is great. No one can throw the ball against them. They get to the quarterback. They cover. They really just took it to Penn State. On paper, their one tough game left is Ohio State, and then the Big Ten championship game against either. Right now, it's looking like Northwestern. Purdue could sneak in there. Iowa could sneak in there, but they'll be heavily favored no matter who they play in that game. And so, yeah, I think they have the inside track.
It's been a long time since Wisconsin's not even talked about in the West.
Yeah, that's true. And Michigan, believe it or not, has never played in the Big Ten championship game since they instituted it 10 years ago or whatever it was.
Really?
Never even played in it.
Well, I think, who knows?
I think that streak ends.
David, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
You know, as we talk about with Carl and everything, before we get to the market here, which we're going to, this thing caught my eye, because, you know, I've been having this ongoing kind of debate with Lou regarding about shifting subjects, our aircraft carriers, and how we've managed to take six of them out of use since we've been doing the show, Maddie. So we used to have 16, and now we've got 10. And we've got this new one. I don't understand how come we have aircraft carriers. Nobody else in the world's even, like, got one. Or British have one. The Russians have one. The thing can't even move very fast. We have, like, you know, 100 planes on a damn thing or 200 planes. That's not enough. The new one's got to have 250 planes. And I would rather have 16 of the old-style 150 planes than 10 of the new style, because I don't want people out on deployment that long. I think it's really bad for them. Anyway, I just have reasons for that. Well, this Gerald R. Ford, which is the new one, with all this new technology that doesn't seem to want to work. Now, the latest is they have no elevators to bring bombs up to the flight deck because they decided to go with maglev elevators instead of cables. Ben, you ever heard such a thing on a bouncing ship? Maglev? And, of course, this was not proven out before they decided. So now, since 2015, they've been trying to make these things work. You know what they've been having? Get a load of this for a phrase. Uncommanded movements. What the hell does that mean? I think it goes up and down on its own? It must. Uncommanded movement? I'm in the elevator, I want to go down, it goes up, or it falls, or what are we talking about here? Is this thing ever going to work? How many billions of dollars? But the weird part is, we've scrapped the ones behind it, so we can't even, like, say, well, the hell with this thing, well, we use one of the old ones. We send them to scrapyard. It's unconscionable. Anyway, David, election tomorrow, people have polls. First half hour of the show, we spent a bunch of time saying, how can you even poll anybody these days, because nobody's got a phone. All kinds of questions, not many answers. We had the dueling. Have you ever seen? I'll ask you without prefacing the witness. Have you ever seen dueling people from an administration like you did last Friday?
That was ridiculous. I will say the interest is high, though. I mean, I tried to go Friday to vote early, and our precinct is at the police station. I mean, you literally would have had to walk two blocks, and I walked two blocks, and I don't know how the police could function, because they were in the training room waiting to vote, they were down the hall, they were literally to the reporting window for the police. It was absolutely sardinesville. You couldn't get a spot to stand.
I thought you had to go downtown if you want to do early voting. You can't just you went to your regular polling place?
Yeah.
Well, ours wasn't open on the block, was it, Manny?
Not that I know of, but I do know that Friday afternoon, at like 2 p.m., 50 people deep for an hour the whole time at the early voting place. I mean, I
went there Saturday because I gave up Friday. I was there 20 minutes before the poll opened. The the precinct opened at 9. I was there at 20 to 9. I was 19th in line.
Wow.
And I was happy because by the time I came out of voting, they were, without exaggeration, at least a block down out the door.
Well, Steph,
I don't know that I've ever seen that for a midterm election before.
No, this was insane.
Well, Steph, on Saturday, she said she had to come downtown. Went to somewhere in Washington, 175 Washington or whatever. She had to vote?
Yeah, that's where I was talking about.
Well, yeah, I didn't know you could just wander in the hood and do it.
I think that may be a suburb
here
thing.
They were really good. I mean, you had to have your identification, you had to sign a document, whatever. If your addresses didn't match, you had to literally fill out a new registration form and go get two pieces of identification with your picture, two pieces with your picture and signature on it.
Really?
It was strict, but I'll tell you, the interest, I've never seen it before.
Do you have local people you can vote for? Because our local people are unopposed.
It was mixed. you know me, I'm always searching for Libertarian or Green Party. There weren't too many. There were some unopposed Republicans, and there were some unopposed Democrats, especially in the area of judges. And there was literally a thing to vote on whether unopposed judges should be retained or not. And, I mean, if you said no, then who's the judge? I mean, I didn't get that proposal.
Well, actually, this may surprise you. I did some research on the judges, the retention ballot. For those that are in different parts of the country, we actually have something stupid here called a retention ballot. There'll be a list of, like, 60 judges you've never known unless you're, like, in court. Unless you're, whatever. How you'd know somebody at 26th in California unless you're A, on a jury, or B, I've got arrested. I have no idea. But you got to vote yes or no on these people. And this is going back a few years, David, but left to your own devices, if you just say to people, vote yes or no, there's going to be people like maybe me that would vote no. But it's almost exactly between 84 and 86% of everybody gets a yes vote, because people just don't feel right about voting no for somebody that they don't know. I mean, they're probably uncomfortable voting yes, but you'd rather have a guy there. This, mentality.
It's been there.
You'd rather, if you don't know anybody, you'd probably rather, you don't want to say something nice about them, but you sure don't want say something bad about them.
Right.
So, but if somebody, if all of a sudden Matty Weber's a judge, he never shows up, blah, blah, blah. He got in, nobody knows how he got in. Never shows up. He gave two or three crummy rulings. Doesn't seem to know the law. Is always late. Might even have been drunk a couple of times. Hungover. And every paper, well, I say every paper, the two we got left, or one and a half we got left, both say, throw this Matty Weber guy out. And then the Bar Association says, you got to throw this Matty Weber guy out. Almost invariably, he would go from 85% to 66, 67%. And I don't think there's ever been a person, if there has, it's been recent, there's ever been a person that's been thrown out. Even if somebody says this guy or lady has not shown up for the last year and still doing a paycheck, they'll still get over 50%.
No, I get it.
So
well, and that's kind of how I felt, even though, I like to think of myself as close to pure independent as possible. If there's an offering, I'll take it. But when it came to judges, I was like, if I vote no because he's unopposed, then who gets in?
Well, I think the person is out, and they'll have to have somebody. There'll be an election next time.
Oh, okay.
On the retention.
But what do you do in the interim? Not have a judge in
the
position?
They could do it a couple less, probably.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. So if I really didn't know the name or heard anything or whatever, or just didn't sound right, then I left a blank. Otherwise, I voted to retain the person.
Well, if you're in a real grumpy mood, which I'm not, and you want to be a real bleep, which I'm not, what it really tells you is that only 18% of the people read anything. That 85% with nothing said about them, and 67% with everybody in the world who's supposed to know something saying the guy or lady's no good. That only 18% read. The other people don't care.
You're probably right, but I like I said, if attendance matters, and I think it is, it does, because both sides are pleading, go vote, go vote, go vote. Even if you don't vote for me, vote. The interest was spectacular. People were waiting forever, on the weekend.
I want to know. What did Mr. T say, Matty? I pity the fool.
That's right.
I pity the fool.
Fellow Southsider.
Yeah, I pity the fool who actually wants somebody to show up and vote against him. How ignorant is that? I know you're all going to vote against me. I'll rent the bus for you. Nobody does that. Manny, who would even... No, please. Get off the bar stool. You hate me. You want to go vote for Manny Weber. Here, I'll buy your last drink. Go and come back. I'll buy you one. But just make sure you vote. Who actually thinks anybody wants that to happen? That this guy to drag his behind on the block and vote against me?
Well, in that scenario, you're right. No one, of course, wants that to happen. But you do have one party that wins when there's low voter turnout, and you have the other party that wins when there's high voter turnout. So if you are voting for the left, for a progressive agenda, then you just want as many people as possible to go vote. You don't care. Your message doesn't have to be vote for me. It just has to be vote. And that's the difference. Whereas Republicans, they don't want people to vote. They make it as difficult as possible. They want you know, we read all the time about voter restrictions and making it extremely difficult to vote. David's example, having to require two forms of identification with picture on them to vote. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Picture and signature.
No, that's the change from one spot to another.
But still, it's a bit much.
What should it be? You don't think there's people that would vote twice?
I think you're talking about 0.0001% of people that would potentially do that.
I think we have people that would organize that instantly on both sides.
You could be right. And I understand you have to, you know, make it, you have to have some sort of identification to register. I get all that, but for God's sake, they really do make it as complicated as possible.
You know,
I had to do it, I couldn't vote because I had the only form of identification that I have with picture and signature is my driver's license. I don't have anything else.
I'll just lob this one out there. You two guys, you've had how many years? I mean, I can remember when you had to do this like a month before. You've had how any given time? I'm not giving you grief, David, but people could have done this, I think, easier. Okay, but if you decide on the last day to walk up there and now. Not only is there a line, but I used to live over there. I moved. I didn't tell anybody, even though I knew I should have. And by the way, here I am. I don't know how easy it should be. I mean, not many people have two picture IDs, by the way, I would think.
Yeah, but two picture IDs and on those same IDs, your signature.
Your passport and your driver's license, I assume, would be...
But a lot of people don't have a passport.
Yeah, a lot of people don't have a passport. But I don't have anything besides those two.
What I would recommend to anybody, and again, this is not... I know I will never recommend a stock because that's not what I do, but next time you get your passport, it's not much dough. I'm going to say another $20 or something. Get the little card ID because I did that, and I've used it a bunch of times when I needed two. It's like a credit card. It's got the chip in it. Not a credit card. It's like your driver's license. It's got a chip in it. You can use it to go to Canada or Mexico when you're driving, not by plane. But I've used it a bunch of times. Like, I'll put that in my pocket getting on a plane, and I'll use that instead of my driver's license because I, keep my wallet in my pocket or whatever. But that's a terrific second ID, and it's not much money. You know what a state ID costs you more than a driver's license? I did an Illinois state ID once, and now it uses passport thing. But you're right. There's not much else you have with a picture and a signature in it other than your driver's license. What if you don't drive?
And you know what? There were some folks that, whatever, really old, with walkers and the like, and, I don't know if they unfortunately had a death in the family or whatever, but they moved, they said, hey, look, we moved into an elderly care center or whatever, and we don't drive, and we don't live at that address,
yep.
so we don't have a driver's. Sorry.
Yeah, but this is not. People say everybody should have this, and I'm with you guys on this. I'm just being good radio and challenging you guys. There's all kinds of people. I'm sure if you go into the backwoods of Alabama, everybody knows Mrs. Jones. Mrs. Jones, I don't think probably doesn't have one piece of paper ever, but she's been voting forever. And you know what? Everybody knows where she lives, and to me, that's good enough. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think you suddenly demand. If you do, if you want her to be registered with a voter ID and stuff, I honestly don't have a problem with that. But after this election, you try your best in the next 2 years to bring out vans, bing, whatever. Bring her over, get her a state ID, and then let her register. Do what you have to do to make it easy for people. Then I don't have a problem with it. If all of a sudden you just jump everybody with some hard thing, then that I think is the issue, right, Maddie, that you have. If all of a sudden you change it and make it harder at the last second to where somebody doesn't get a chance to vote. But then again, if you do that for 2 years and nobody goes there and then they're pissed off on the day it votes, I don't really have a lot of sympathy for them either. So I'm sort of in the middle on this, I guess you can. All right, David, are you as PO'd as I am about the 9 or 10 countries now that get to buy Iranian oil, even though there's a huge embargo and I couldn't figure out why oil was going down, and now I know. I didn't get that memo.
Eight, nine, ten.
What's the difference? All the big ones.
Well, and then there's different types of exclusions. Like, I think India, there was something where Korea needed it, so they're totally, get whatever you want because Korea's, starved for oil. But India well, you can get it for now, but you, in 60 days or 90 days or whatever, you have to have a plan to phase out, you know, buying from.
Yeah, I buy that like I'll buy a bridge.
So, I mean, it's just, the whole thing's pretty weird.
So why are the
I don't know enough about the details, but the details seem very concerning to me.
Why are the Emirates on there? So they can resell it?
I don't know that.
You can guess.
Probably. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure there's plenty of back doors that Iran has.
What? So Friday...
I'm sure Russia's won.
All right, so Friday we had Trump saying that there could be a deal. Larry Kudlow saying no friggin' way. Trump coming back out saying, yeah, there are. Now Z this morning says, no, there isn't. Could you write fiction like this?
Oh, come on, Tom. It's all fake news.
Yeah, it's all
fake. Even if we heard it from the chief economic advisor to the administration, it's all fake news.
I like when somebody quotes you, it's fake news. I guess maybe there is a definition, Matty. It is fake news when the guy says something. Is that possible? All right, so now if I'm looking at the charts today, what the hell are they telling me? Other than the fact that the swings in the market are pretty dramatic.
If you look at the oscillators, they got way extended. There were some divergences, you know, when the market made its lows about six sessions ago, or last Monday. And it looks like a decent chance at a bottom. I wouldn't say it's the best I've ever seen, but not bad. And you got some positive crossovers in the momentum indexes. That said, you know, you rallied, 1,200 points in the Dow off the lows in a matter of 2.5 sessions. So, you know, some back and filling, you know, is warranted and expected if it is a good bottom from what I would say is really a treacherous sell-off, much more than the percentages in the indexes would suggest. So, you know, I would like to see a little bit of downside work, you know, early this week. And if we can, you know, hold some breaks to some key points, and I think you have to look at Apple for direction because it certainly brought a lot of things down on Friday. And if you can bottom by Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, maybe, you know, we start up again at least for a seasonal rally.
What was the top-to-bottom swing Friday, 900 points?
Was it them? I don't
know. Well, we were up.
Was it?
I thought we were up like four. We were up. No, we would have been up. No, we were up. We would have been up 450 without Apple. We were actually up 350.
Right.
Then we went down, 500 and finished down 180 or something like that? What do you make of, I got to ask you.
Now and volatility went down.
Your job was to have me walk in some morning and have gold up 100 points. You failed miserably at that so far. What have you done to natural gas?
Supposedly there was Nat Gas Weather View. There were two.
What the hell is that?
Two weather forecasters. One came out Thursday, and that one, I think, Nat Gas Weather Forecast came out Friday again and said not just the first 5 days of November will be unseasonably cold, but the whole month is going to be 5 to 8 degrees colder than normal all over the country.
David, this is 9% move. I've never seen this.
No,
up 27
you know,
cents.
I get it. You know, but I looked at the volumes. I could. In an extra electronic session and one full session between Globex and the NYMEX, they did 900,000 contracts.
And how big are those contracts? They're huge, right?
That's a big equity swing.
What off the top of your head? We actually had some people when Billy was still alive. He used to do our futures and. We have people that actually used to do this country, isn't it? Isn't it like 10
big,
cents? Like,
big
like,
time move.
It's like multi-thousand dollars in one contract, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen 27 cents on a day before, or 29. I mean, I'm sure there have
I'm
been.
I'm sure days. It's happened back in my recollection from whatever, 12, 13 years ago. I'm very confident that it has happened, but off a weather forecast, maybe there was a supply disruption. Maybe there was, you know, some big demand from somewhere. I don't know that, but at least from what Dow Jones and Reuters and Wall Street Journal say, it's these two weather forecasts. It's hard to believe.
I did hear from a couple of guys who had an adult beverage with the other night that the build is not as high as last year.
Yes.
S&P futures unchanged. Dow futures down 12. Nasdaq futures down 14. Tomorrow, I guess we'll talk all about the election. It should be interesting. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.